and at the end he reaches the supreme eternal abode. So the first paragraph of the purport. This verse is a summation of the 7th and 8th chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. One has to study the Vedas under the guidance of the spiritual master and undergo many austerities and penances while living under his care. A brahmachari has to live in the home of the spiritual master just like a servant, and he must beg alms from door to door and bring them to the spiritual master. He takes food only under the master's order, and if the master neglects to call the student for food that day, the student fasts. These are some of the Vedic principles for observing brahmacharya.
Once again, I'll read the verse. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of all the results derived from studying the Vedas. So, I'm going to pause here. I was just having a conversation yesterday with this young boy who is looking to see what he can do with his life. He has been pursuing education. He's been working in career. He's trying to get a music career going. He's trying so many different things. And he's thinking that if I continue in this way, someday I'll have the facility to serve Krishna better. But before I can give myself full time to Krishna, I need to go back and complete my education. And I need to do so much this and so much that. Not that his particular education would be something that he could use as a direct service to Krishna, but he felt that this is something I need to get myself completely materially fit before I take up this full-time service of Krishna, you see. And at the same time, he was saying to me how he was lamenting how he seems to be suffering and lost. He doesn't, the things that he's attempting to do really have no taste, you see. So on one hand, he's saying, I really want to surrender full-time, 100% to the service of Krishna, you see. However, before I do that, I need to do all these other things. I need to build a nice life. You see, I have to become secure. I have to have some nice a home. I want a home. You see, a nice home. You see. And in talking with him, he also was saying how trying to accumulate these things was very troublesome and giving him so much anxiety. So he was asking my advice, well, what do you recommend? And I said, well, you know, it doesn't seem intelligent to me that you're wanting to be renounced. He was saying, I like the way that all of you live in the temple there. It's very wonderful. He's been traveling around with a very well-known devotee group, chanting very nice mantras. I won't say who, I don't want to. But anyway, he was feeling some anxiety. So I said, it seems to me that you're trying so hard to accumulate so many things that you can renounce. You see, why should you work so hard to build all of this that someday you want to give up? You see, why not take the step now if you can, if it's possible? Not necessary if you feel that you have to have this business life and progress in this way to build something that ultimately you want to give up and renounce, then that's okay. But why not go directly there now? If renunciation is what you want, and if you have the understanding that it's so troublesome to live in this world in that way and to work so hard to maintain such a big house and so much property that he was talking about that he wants to accumulate. You know, why build it and renounce it, you see? Why spend so much time studying? He wanted to go get so many more. He felt that he would be better if he had so many more degrees. You see, and I want to get, because if he got the degrees, he would feel more confident in his ability to serve Krishna. You see, and simply I was requesting, why not spend your time studying Srila Prabhupada's books, study the Vedas. If you want to be scholarly, you can take Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhai Bhav. There's so many things, you see. And as the verse is saying, once we know the science of Krishna consciousness, one knows everything. If someone knows trigonometry, then there's no need to go to first grade and learn basic math. 2 + 2 = 4. You see, that's automatically included. You see? So, would you like to...
Want to speak a little more?
Sure, as you like. I'm your servant.
Should I take a chakra read a little more?
All right, I'm going to read the rest of
the verse. Okay. Verse.
So, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing... philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all of these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. The ultimate goal is to go back home, back to Godhead, to return to our constitutional position as an eternal servant of Krishna. See, the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness, about practicing bhakti yoga, is that the goal and the process are one and the same. You see? The goal of bhakti yoga is to become a surrendered full-time servant of Krishna. And we do that by becoming the full-time servant of Krishna, or like that, you see? So once we take up the process, we've all automatically achieved the goal. All we have to do is continue. We continue to serve Krishna in this way. See. So, one who knows this science of Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada says, knows everything. Everything is included. Srila Prabhupada said again and again, everything is in my books. Everything. We don't need to strive outside of Srila Prabhupada's books. I was thinking last evening that the simple, it's amazing how people are moved by so many words. You know, they go to movies and they hear, what do they call these, catchphrases. You know, there's another thing, soundbite. You know, they hear these things, and it's very hip. Very update if you say things that a particular star might be saying. And I'm amazed at how these things change. They keep, you know, this month there's one, and then next month there's another, and then there's so, every time you go onto the internet, you'll see there's different things going on. You know? So people are so much affected by the words. There's so many words that are floating around in our society. People want to emulate so many personalities in this material world. Simply a waste of time. It's like a dog. You ever see a dog who's chasing his tail? You see, they're running around and around like that. We need a new one. We need a new catchphrase. You know, it's just like I've noticed, I'm wondering how long the phrase, the term, back in the 60s and 70s, we used to say man a lot. Now they say dude a lot. And I'm wondering how long it won't be too long before dude, if you say dude, you're going to be like, really, passe, just not hip. But you've got to say dude now to be hip. So... But dude's going to be unhip one of these things. So we have to stay on top of these things.
The next one's going to be Prabhu.
Yeah. So people are wasting so much time and so much effort. The heroes are movie stars, musicians, and whatnot. It's so unfortunate that people have not been able to, enough people anyway, have not been exposed to Srila Prabhupada's books. You see? And the personality of Srila Prabhupada. You see? If more and more people could be exposed, it's just like we're not imitating, all of us here, we're not imitating Srila Prabhupada, but we are emulating his way. He gave us this wonderful science. He gave us everything that we need in his books. You see? So, it's not that our attempt is to copy, but he gave us the way to talk, the way to walk, the way to dress, the way to eat, the way to sleep, the way to care for our bodies, everything he gave us. We don't need anything else. We really don't. However, it's understandable sometimes, from time to time, someone may have, he perceives a need or a strong desire to have more material possessions and still be Krishna conscious. That is very good. That is very good. You use it in Krishna's service. You see. But keep in mind that once you take up this process and once you associate with Srila Prabhupada in his books, you have everything. There's no need for anything else. There's no need. Key word is need. So, should I continue or would you like to speak? I am your servant.
You can divide it up. I'll speak something.
Good.
Maybe divide up some questions. We're here.
I read just the first paragraph.
Okay. Want to read a little more? I'll read it, I guess. Continuing Prabhupada's purport, Prabhupada was glossing Vedeshu, the study of the Vedas. After the student studies the Vedas under the master for some time, at least from age 5 to 20, he becomes a man of perfect character. Study of the Vedas is not meant for the recreation of armchair speculators, but for the formation of character. After this training, the brahmachari is allowed to enter into household life and marry. When he's a householder, he has to perform many sacrifices so that he may achieve further enlightenment. He must also give charity according to the country, time, and candidate, discriminating among charity and goodness in passion and in ignorance, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. Then, after retiring from household life, upon accepting the order of Vanaprastha, he undergoes severe penances, living in forests, dressing with tree bark, not shaving, etc. By carrying out the orders of brahmacharya, householder life, Vanaprastha, and finally sannyas, one becomes elevated to the perfectional stage of life. Some are then elevated to the heavenly kingdoms, and when they become even more advanced, they are liberated in the spiritual sky, either in the impersonal Brahmajyoti, or in the Vaikuntha planets, or Krishna Loka. This is the path outlined by Vedic literatures. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life.
Hare Krishna.
Has a mind of its own. It can go a little higher. Om Akyam Tiniran Tasya Kiran Janan Sharapaya Chakshur Niditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Shwayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shabadadikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jutha Patakamavan Shri Gurum Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Shagana Raghunathan Vitam Sam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shavadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. He Krishna Purana Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vacha Gopatarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Kenevascha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vedeshu Jagyeshu Tapasu Chaiva Dhaneshu Yat Punya Palam Pradishtam Atyeti Tat Sarvamidam Viditva Yogi Param Sthanam Upaiti Chajam. In this chapter, Arjuna began by asking several questions. And the most important question is, I think we can leave photographs till later, please. Most, after I'm gone. The most important question was how one could know Krishna, how one could think of Krishna, even at the time of death. Because the time of death is the crucial time, the time when one moves from one body to the next, one lifetime to the next, from this life to the next destination. That transition is crucial. Just as the transition from high school to college is crucial. Or the transition from student life to married life is a crucial sort of transition. The ultimate transition is transition from at the end of life. Everything's tested at the time of death. Our whole lifetime's project is tested. And according to what we've done, what we've thought of in this life, we get our next lifetime. That may be higher, maybe lower, or maybe neither higher nor lower, just come back and repeat more or less what we've gone through again. We don't know. But for one who thinks of Krishna, at the time of death, the destination is Krishna. Yam yam vapi smaran pavam tyaja chante kaleva tam tam eva iti kantiya sarata pavam. Whatever one thinks of at the time of death, that, to
determines one's next destination. There was some airline crash some years ago, and they recovered, everybody died, and they recovered the black box with the cockpit recordings. And you could hear the pilots struggling and trying to get the plane to go. But finally it nosedived. And the pilot's last words, "I love you, Ma." And thought of his mother at the time of death. So, where will he go? Maybe it depends what kind of person his mother was. Maybe he'll become a woman in the next life. But he doesn't attain perfection. Unless his mother was a pure devotee of Krishna. Or unless he was calling out to Radharani, which I doubt. There was, I did an interview one time with some various devotees in Canada. And one of them was a young lady who happened to be a nurse. And she told me the story of how she got involved with Krishna consciousness. She was working on the ward, I guess late in the evening, no, middle of the night actually. And one elderly patient, woman, was dying. And she called out, "Nurse, nurse, I'm dying, I'm dying." So the young girl, who wasn't a devotee at that time, came, and the woman said, "What should I do? What should I do?" And the girl said, "Well, I don't know what you should do." And then the woman died. And the girl told me, as I was, you know, wrapping her up, how would they do it? She was thinking, what should I have told her? What should she have done? And thinking about herself, what will I do? And she realized that she didn't know. That really the bottom line was that she didn't know what to do with her life, didn't know where she was going. She's a nurse, she has a career, she whatever. But in terms of ultimate meaning, she didn't know. And that's when she began seeking and finally came to Krishna consciousness. Because that's the crucial issue. Not what's in my bank at the end of my life, how much property I have, how many degrees I have, how many people come to my funeral, what they print about me in the local newspaper or association magazine. The real thing is, where do I go? The materialists, there is no going anywhere for them. The body is everything. Life is just a manifestation of chemical activity. And when the activity ceases, then life is over, and that's everything. That's a materialistic outlook. From that point of view, life is really meaningless because everything is just a batch of patterns of chemical activity, and it really doesn't matter this pattern, that pattern, or the third pattern. It's just chemicals bubbling, whether they bubble this way or bubble that way. What ultimate meaning does it have? And his death is as meaningful as knocking over a beaker of chemicals, which then get wiped up from the floor. floor and wring out the rag and say, okay, well, that was that. No use crying over spilled chemicals. But at least Lord Krishna is not accepting such a point of view. He says, for those who've adopted that point of view, Moghasha, Mogha Karvano, Mogha Jnana Vichetasa, all of their hopes are ultimately smashed. All of their work is ultimately useless. All of their intellectual accomplishment amounts to nothing. Because they've turned away from the ultimate purpose of life. They've turned away from Krishna. Asurim Rakshasim Chaiva Prakriti Mohanim Shrita. They've simply taken shelter of the material energy and tried to get something from this material energy for the brief time that they think they exist. Iti Gyan Vimohita. This is ignorance. The real person is the consciousness within the body, the living spark within the body. And one can understand one's presence in the body by introspection, by turning one's consciousness away from material things and toward oneself and asking, here I am thinking about myself, who is doing that thinking? One will finally come to a point of understanding that I'm not this body, that I'm the Atman, the spirit soul within the body. And if that's so, then what is my life meant for? Again, you come either now, having moved past, well, matter is everything. There's a fork, another fork in the road. And one can go toward a sort of impersonal ideal in which everything is ultimately without form, without qualities. The Supreme has no form, no qualities, no name, no attributes. And with that understanding or that conception, one hopes to merge with the Supreme or become one with the Supreme. But there's a problem with that viewpoint. If everything is ultimately without form, without qualities, without name, without variety, where's all the variety come from? You have tan walls and, tan seat and tan, a lot of things are tan here, but we have garlands with orange and white and yellow and green. And we have so many young people and old people, and we have heat and cold and so many varieties. We have planets with rings around them. We have planets with lines on them. We have planets with vegetation. We have all sorts of planets, all sorts of places. You have light, you have darkness, you have... Where does all that come from if the source of everything is totally void of varieties? Is there any good explanation? We've heard, I'm sure you've heard from lots of speakers who talk and say that the Supreme ultimately is beyond form, beyond qualities, right? Has anyone not heard that? You've all heard it, right? But what's their explanation of where the varieties come from then? Has anyone heard of a good story? What do they say?
They mean that the Supreme doesn't have material form, it's beyond matter.
Okay, then, what does he have?
Spiritual.
That's us. That's our philosophy. What's their philosophy?
Light and sound.
Light and sound?
Yeah.
The Supreme is light and sound?
Sound
means variety. The?
The Maya philosophy that everything's just illusion.
Ah, the varieties are all due to illusion. Actually, there's only oneness. There's only the Supreme. Sarva Kalaviyam Brahma. There's only Brahma. There's only the Absolute. Eka Brahma Tatiya Masti. There's only the one Supreme, and there's no second existence. Everything is just one. And we see all of these varieties, but actually that's just because of our illusion. If it weren't for our illusion, we'd see that there's only, or we'd realize that there's only the one transcendent absolute Brahma, and you're also that same Supreme.
The eye worship is just focus on mind in one point.
That's a process. You focus your mind on one point, but to reach that, to go beyond the illusions of this world with all of its dualities, and to see that there's only, to realize there's only the Absolute, and all the varieties that we see are due to illusion. They're all due to illusion. We have to go beyond this illusion to realize the oneness, which is the only truth. Do they say that? Have you heard that before? Okay. Next question. Where does the illusion come from? Everything's one. There's only the Supreme. There's nothing else. And it only seems that we're individuals. It only seems that there's you and me, or there's God and us, or there's the world and us, or the world and God. All these divisions, dualities, differences, distinctions only seem to exist because of the illusion. Where does the illusion come from? Illusion comes from your mind. Where does your mind come from? Or where does your mind pick up illusion from?
It's the ego which creates.
It's the ego which creates all of this.
The
it creates the individuality, the illusion of individuality. Where does that ego come from?
Ajnana.
It comes from ajnana, ignorance. Where does ajnana come from?
I think they say ultimately it comes from the gunas, right?
It ultimately comes from the gunas. Where do the gunas come from?
Krishna.
We say Krishna. What do they say? Remember, the absolute truth has no form, no qualities, no attributes. It's absolutely homogeneous oneness. There's no duality. There's no A and B. There's no I and you. There's no distinction between anything and anything else. It's absolute kaivala dvaita, absolute oneness. And only because of illusion or ego or ignorance do we think it's otherwise? So where does this illusion or ego or ignorance come from?
Don't they think of it as a pastime, that we're all God and it's just a pastime?
It's just a pastime. Where is this pastime generated from? That's not a whole different theory, really, or variation on a theme. But where, if taking it, that really there's only oneness, and the variety is due to illusion. Where does the illusion come from? It can't come from the impersonal absolute, because then the impersonal absolute would be the source of something. There'd be the impersonal absolute, and there'd be the illusion that's generated from the impersonal absolute. Then you don't have one anymore, then you have two. And that spoils the pie. It ruins the theory. It can't be like that. If everything's one, then everything has to be one. But truth and illusion, that's two. Or knowledge and ignorance, that's two. Or ego and freedom from ego, that's two. How can there be two if everything is one? You have an answer.
All this variety is a manifestation of the oneness.
all this variety is a manifestation of oneness. But how does the oneness manifest itself in variety when variety is illusory? If the absolute is one but manifests itself in variety, then the absolute must have two parts, the one part and the variegated part. That's two. Then what?
So the problem is that, like, we see ourselves as body, but we are not the body. So right now our vision is distorted where we are not seeing ourselves as self. Because right now we can't even describe ourselves, and the process that we are trying to describe in things in terms of matter, those things which are beyond matter. So that's why the both oneness and variety both are like inconceivable, because we are trying to look at the platform of matter. That's why it's achintya bheda veda tattva, that it's inconceivable right now. So we have to transcend ourselves to a spiritual platform, so we can see that real absolute truth.
Well, we're mixing philosophies here a little bit. But if we stick to the impersonal path, and then we say, well, we really can't describe these things because we're in ignorance, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
No, Prabhuji, sorry. Like, the one who has seen their self, like Atma-darshan, who has taken Atma-darshan, they don't see the other as a different from himself. That's how they have explained us. This self is equal.
The person who's in oneness, who's attained Atmagyan, doesn't see others as different from himself.
There's no selfish. There's just self.
He sees others the same as himself. And that's true. Bhagavad Gita says, Atmopamina Sarvatra. He sees everyone as being one with himself. Ekatam Anupashyata in the Upanishads. Therefore, there's one teacher. You know, Srila Prabhupada used to sign his letters, "Your ever well-wisher." And there was, or is, a teacher of the Advaita path, the path of absolute monism. And he would sign his letters, "Your own true self." Profound. Your own true self. Now, if he's the own true self, if he's my own true self, then why is he writing me a letter? If he's me and I'm him, why waste the money on postage? Well, the answer is that he's the realized self and I'm the self in ignorance, right?
Yeah, sure.
Now, if he's my own true self and he's identical with me and he's a realized soul, he's attained perfect knowledge, I must also have attained perfect knowledge and I must also be a perfect soul because there's no difference between him and me. If my true self is his true self, and he's attained perfection, I must have attained perfection. Right?
Define perfection.
Excuse me?
Perfection.
Perfection for him is to realize that everything is one. If he's realized it, I must have realized it. Because he's me and I'm him. If everything is one, then everything is one. In that case, if he's attained perfection, or if I'm in ignorance, he must be in ignorance. Because we're one.
But why is like a few sannyasis or some souls are realist and others are not realist?
Some are...
Or realist, others are not realist.
That's my question. If we're all one, how is it possible that some of us could be realized and some of us not realized? If the self is only one, and only by illusion does it appear to be many, then you're the same self that I am. And we're both the same self that he is. So if he's attained perfection, so should everyone in the room, or everyone in the universe. And manifestly, that's not what's happened. Now, why is that? Is it possible that it's because the philosophy is wrong? That it's got a irretrievable flaw in it? Yes. Ultimately, it sinks. Philosophy doesn't work. Even on a mundane platform, if I'm hungry and you sit down and have some rice, dal, and chapatis, my problem is finished. I should feel full. Because you're me and I'm you and all of that. How can there be a part of the self that hasn't realized yet? If there are parts, you don't have oneness. Oneness means there can't, absolute oneness means there can't be any parts. There's only the absolute whole. There are no parts to be some more realized, some less realized. There's only God, the absolute, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. Then how could some of us not have realized it and others have realized? Then you're cutting the absolute into pieces again. The realized part and the not realized part. But how could it be a part if you only have oneness? It doesn't work. Therefore, Krishna says, Natvaivaham jatunasam natvam neame janadipa. Nachaiva nabhavishyama sarvevam. Though there was never a time when I didn't exist, and you didn't exist, and all the kings and princes on this battlefield didn't exist. We all existed in the past. And we exist now. Nachayva, Navavishama, and there'll never be a time when we'll cease to exist. I and you and all of them. But Krishna is speaking in terms of individuals, individuality. And certainly Krishna is not an illusion. Otherwise, what's the use of Bhagavad Gita? Arjuna may be an illusion, but Krishna is enlightening Arjuna. So he is speaking on the platform of absolute knowledge. And he says, I, you, all of us, we're eternal individuals. What's the difference between Krishna and us? Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitanam. The Upanishads say there's among all of the eternal living beings, there's one supreme living being. Chaitanas chaitanam. Among all the conscious living entities, there's one supreme conscious living entity. Eko bahunam yoga didhati kama. What's the difference? The one is supporting the many. The one is supplying all the necessities, all the needs and desires of the many. Not that everyone is on the same level. Krishna is infinite. But we're infinitesimal. But we're one with Krishna, because Krishna is a person, we're persons. Krishna is eternal, we're eternal. Krishna is conscious, Krishna has knowledge, we're also conscious, we also have knowledge. Krishna is joyful, we also have the ability to experience joy. So we're one with Krishna. In quality. The gold in your earring is the same as the gold in the mine. It's one. Gold is gold. There's no difference between the gold earring and the big block of gold sitting in a vault somewhere. It's one. But your wife would look very funny walking around with a big block of gold on her ear. It would hurt. You say, well, there's no difference between earring and block. One thing is you can't afford the block. And the other thing is that she couldn't wear it. So they're one in quality, but they're different in quantity. Qualitatively one, quantitatively different. There's oneness there, but there's difference there also. And that's what the impersonalist philosophers have missed. They want only oneness and no difference. But there is difference. There's a difference between the supreme eternal and the many subordinate eternals. A difference between the infinite and the infinitesimal. The difference between the living entity, who's the part, Manivamsa Jivaloka. Krishna says all these living beings are Ansh, part of me. There's a difference between the part and the whole. If you own 10 shares of Microsoft, that's a lot different from owning all the shares of Microsoft. The part doesn't equal the whole, even though there's no difference between your shares and all the rest of the shares. They're all, a share is a share. But that you have one share doesn't mean that you have all the shares. You own a little part. So we own a part of the qualities of God. We represent a partial manifestation of God, just as the spark represents a partial manifestation of the fire. It's not the whole fire. And if it dances out of the fire, what happens? Goes out, right? Extinguished.
That does explain the continuity between the Supreme Self and us, that, you know, everyone has a different amount of goodness. Some people have more, some people have less, and you know, more conscious or more evolved you are more closer in terms of quantity. Not closer, but at least some people have more and some people have less. So that part is clear. Yeah. But the part which is not clear is the other side. Let's say an individual who have some good qualities, and of course it's up to us to focus on whether we want to focus on our good qualities or other people's good qualities. We can always ignore the non-good, whatever, however you define, in us or in others. But what is it which is that non-good? What is the nature of that? Or where does it come from? That is still kind of what you raised earlier. That is still kind of unclear.
Let's say that non-good is Maya. Okay? It's illusion, or it comes from, it's the product of the ego, materialistic ego. So we have this non-good portion. Where does it come from? Krishna says, it comes from me. In the seventh chapter, he says, all of these material elements come from me. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego also. Bhumirapa, nalo, vayu, kam, mano, bhuti, hevacha, ahamkara. They are all products of my inferior energy, upper prakriti, the lower nature. Apareya mitasthanyam prakritim vitine pranam jiva bhutam. And there's also a superior energy of Krishna's, the jiva, the living being. Yayedam taryate jagat, who's struggling in the material world with all of these material energies. Purastra shaktir vidhidaiva shuyate, the Supreme has varieties of energy. Just as fire has heat, it has light, and varieties has smoke. So, as soon as we accept that God is a person has different energies. So God has his superior energy, the living beings, and the inferior energy. And because the living beings are tiny, when they turn toward God, they live in the spiritual energy. And when they turn away from God, they live in the material energy. So my hand, when I face it toward the light, it's in the light. When I face it, the palm toward, away from the light, it's in the darkness. But when we turn away from Krishna and toward the material energy, then we come in contact with material energy and we try to control it, we try to enjoy it, and we become entangled. Purusha prakriti stohi pumte prakriti janaka. We become entangled in the material energy. And what is that material energy's characteristic? It has three qualities. Sattva-guna, rajaguna, tamaguna. Goodness, passion, ignorance. And we come in touch with these qualities and we sort of pick them up. You know, a good boy gets in bad association and becomes a bad boy. Why? He's been contaminated. He's been influenced by bad association. Or a bad boy comes in company of good boys, he may become good. So we're pure by nature. But we're dependent by nature. And when we try to be independent and enjoy independently of Krishna, then we become influenced by these three qualities. Someone's more influenced by goodness. Someone's influenced more by passion. Someone more by ignorance. He's influenced by goodness, then he's thoughtful, he's peaceful, he's calm, he's clean, he's truthful. Influenced by passion, he's full of desires. He wants to accumulate something. He wants to get something. He wants his name in the newspaper. He wants his name on the side of the building. He wants to enjoy. He wants to experience. He wants and he wants and he wants. And when he's in ignorance, he doesn't even want. He's just dull and stupid or crazy. You know, drinking or sleeping, dark ignorance. So the gradual Vedic path is to follow some principles of life by which we'll become purified and come from gradually to goodness and sattvam sanjayate jnanam, from goodness knowledge develops. And from there we'll come to the spiritual understanding. Vedeshu, yagyeshu, tapasu chayana, by study of the Vedas, by austerity, by sacrifices, by charity, punyapama, one gets the pious result and one is gradually purified and comes to the mode of goodness. But atyeti tam eva, Yeti yat sarvam idam viditva, yogi param sthanam upayati chakra. Simply by becoming Krishna conscious, by reviving one's eternal relationship with Krishna, one goes beyond all that. Param sthanam upayati chakra. And he comes back to Krishna, back to the spiritual world, and serves Krishna in happy life. Then he's freed from ignorance, he's freed from all the whole material trouble. And that's the goal that Krishna, the path that Krishna is actually pointing out, the path and the goal. Is there another question, or should we
maybe? Do you have one question?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand absolutely what you say, but I absolutely understand what you say, but I just have one confusion of this sort. You know, like if somebody is not has not seen the Atma, I mean a guru like who seen who had this Atma Gyana, like you know, Srila Prabhupada, he already identified Rana Swami Maharaj in among 2,000 people. He was just sitting in a corner. In the 1970s, you know, like how was he able to call him and make him sit on this next to him on the stage, like just because he saw his soul longing for Krishna, probably he should have called him.
Prabhupada, how did Prabhupada, how does a self-realized person see the Atma?
Yes.
How does he recognize an advanced person?
Yes.
And so on? Prabhupada answered that question once to me. He said, face is the index of mind. He said, if you're making spiritual advancement, everyone will see. But, of course, the experienced person or the self-realized person actually sees. He actually sees. Because he knows what is what. What is that in the Bhagavad Gita? Vimutha nanupashyanti. The fools don't see. Why? Because they don't see with eyes of knowledge. Pashyanti jnana chakshusha. The person who actually sees is the person who has eyes. And, well, where do you get eyes of knowledge from? That somebody like touches you and shastra chakshusha. He sees through the eyes of the words of shastra. The words of Krishna, the words of the enlightened sages. And how does he see? Does he just pick up the book? No, he has a spiritual master who explains to him the science and who engages him practically. Prabhupada says, not armchair speculation. It's like surgery. It's not armchair speculation. I go home, I read a book on surgery, and then I come in and cut your appendix. And you want someone who's trained. Anyone can read the book, but the trained person is the person who actually understands what the book is saying. And you want someone who will tell you what the book says. Not that the book says the appendix is down there on the right. You find somebody who says, well, you know, it could be on the left. The bona fide person is the person who tells you the same thing that the book tells you, but enables you to understand it. Person who's saying something other than Krishna, opposite than what Krishna is saying, is useless. How can he explain Bhagavad Gita by explaining, well, Krishna didn't really mean it? He meant what I am telling you. That means, then throw out Bhagavad Gita and just say, this is my philosophy. But then, who are you? Why do we care about you? We're interested in Krishna. So, Krishna is speaking in Bhagavad Gita, and the bona fide guru, bona fide teacher, teaches the same thing to his students. And when they learn it, then they can see. Pashyanti jnana chakshusha, by eyes of knowledge. A doctor, sometimes he'll look at a patient. This is one, in Ayurveda, there are different ways of diagnosis. And one is just by seeing. The patient walks in, and he's like, his hands are shaking, and he's barely walking. Nobody has to tell you this is a weak patient. And the trained physician, he sees so many things. He looks at the color of your skin, you know, it's irritated or whatever it is. He can, just by seeing, he can understand so much. A person who's not trained may not be able to see. But the trained person sees. Again, there are books of Ayurvedic Shastra. And their teachers, and then you feel someone's pulse, and you see there's a pulse. But the trained doctor sees, takes your pulse, and he sees, oh, this, and this. I one doctor I know, a lady came to see him on some routine matter. He took her pulse, called up a surgeon friend of his, and started rushing this woman to the hospital. You cut here, here, and here because this. Trust me. The two had a relationship. He trusted him. Saved the woman's life. How did he know? He was trained. Vedic Shastra says, if the pulse is like this, that it means this. And he was experienced. He was trained by his teachers. So he knew. A person who's trained in the science of Krishna consciousness will see. It's described in Srimad Bhagavatam. These qualities are like the flags on a chariot. In the old days, you'd see the chariot flag and you'd know who was there. If there's a Hanuman's on the flag, then it's Arjuna's chariot. If it's some other kind of flag, it's somebody else's chariot. So one can see who's in goodness, who's in passion, who's in ignorance, who's transcendental. By seeing the qualities. It's not just sentiment. Everything is described in Vedic literature.
So what you're saying and what you said earlier about the continuity with among everyone, with the God, would it be accurate to say that no matter how lower is the soul, he is going to have some goodness or some sat in it. And no matter how higher is the soul, he could have some potential low tendencies. Yeah. It's just a matter of amount or distribution.
Actually, these are all contaminations. Asango hiyam purusha. The soul has no material qualities, but he's covered by material qualities. So someone's more covered by ignorance, someone more by passion, someone more by goodness. But soul is soul. They're all pure. They're just covered. When that covering is washed away, just like, you know, gold. The gold may be just like shiny, practically just a little dust on it, or it may be, you know, covered by mud, or maybe, you know, covered by a rock. But it's gold. So the living entity is gold. He's pure by nature. But he's contaminated by the association of these three qualities. How's he going to get out of that association? What's the process to get him clean? That's this chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Because Krishna is Krishna. Krishna is absolute. Krishna is never contaminated. Pavitram Paramah, he's pure. And there's no difference between Krishna and the sound and Krishna the person. So when you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're in touch with Krishna. It's just a question of realization. And how do we get that realization? By chanting Hare Krishna. The more we chant Hare Krishna, the more we're in touch with Krishna, the more we realize Krishna. And the more we realize Krishna, the more we become free from these material qualities. Probably called it a gradual cleansing process. And we see practically those who take up chanting Hare Krishna become free from bad habits, become free from so many things, become purified, faces become bright. This is the way that every one of us can return to our original pure nature.
How come such a contaminated material qualities could come emerge from pure Krishna?
How do contaminated qualities or material qualities come from Krishna? Just like the clouds.
If material qualities are part of Krishna, how can that be inferior to Krishna?
No, from Krishna's point of view, it's all spiritual. But it's used differently. Just like the government, Society of Government of Austin, or Government of Texas, it has a treasury. And the treasury, it's all one, it's all money. But this is the budget for the college. This is for the education department. This is the budget for the prison department. From the point of view of the government, they're both necessary expenditures. The government doesn't get contaminated by spending money on prisons or elevated by spending money on education. The government has money and it deploys it differently. Just as you take electrical energy and in the summer you turn on the AC and in the winter you turn on the heat. When you want to cook, you turn on the heat. When you want to cool off, you... So it's the same electricity. But it's under intelligent direction and being used in different ways. But for the living beings who are Krishna conscious, the spiritual world is there and Krishna's spiritual energy. And for those who turn away from Krishna, Maya is there, Krishna's material energy. And they both come from Krishna. Where is the cloud coming from? Coming from the sun. The sun is extracting water from the ocean, making clouds. How from the sun could a dark cloud come? The sun is working in many different ways. So for those of us who insist, I want independence, I don't want to serve Krishna, I want to be Krishna, I want to... All right, here's the material world. All right. And for those who want to be one with Krishna in the sense of cooperation, the way there's oneness in a family, there's oneness. It's not because the son is the father and the father is the mother and the mother is the sister. It's because everyone cooperates. There's oneness of purpose. Say in the family, everyone's trying to please the son is trying to please the father, the wife is trying to please the husband. So there's oneness. But if somebody said, well, you know, I want something completely different, and there's duality. But not that the son becomes the father becomes and everybody's one. That never happens. There's oneness, and there's individuality at the same time. So that's the spiritual situation. We're meant to be in oneness with Krishna by serving Krishna. Otherwise, if we think that we'll serve ourselves and be happy, well, that's the material world. And the project isn't working. It's a failure. So Krishna says, it's always been a failure. It's a failure now. It'll be a failure in the future. Give up. Sarvadharman pratyaja, mamekam shunya. Give up all your other nonsense and surrender to me. Then you'll have no problems. I guarantee it. That's Krishna consciousness. All right. Some more cure time?